Welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
Later on Building Bridges, mine workers organized for safety on the job and for union rights at Peabody Coal. But first, speaking of healthcare, one of our favorite groups, Healthcare Now, has produced a humorous cartoon primer on the healthcare crisis in this country and the single-payer solution, or Medicare for All, which forms the basis of Representative Conyers' legislation, H.R. 676. And now, Don't Be a Chicken, produced by Healthcare Now.
This is the story of the American chicken.
That's us!
The great thing about American chickens is they come in different shapes, sizes, and colors. Now, despite their many physical differences, American chickens, like all chickens, have one thing in common.
American Idol?
They all need quality health care on a regular basis to survive and be healthy.
And be productive.
And that health care needs to be complete and comprehensive. It can't be just one service or the other for only one chicken or the other.
And those are my feelings.
The services need to be for every chicken, and they need to be of the highest quality.
Anybody can see that.
Wait a minute, there's a problem.
Problem is, insurance companies are responsible for providing health care for all American chickens. They have confusing and misleading names for these health care plans. Acronyms like HMOs and CCMOs, HSAs, and prepaid plans. They tell the chickens which doctors to see and what services to receive. The worst part about it is, even though the insurance companies don't provide the services themselves, they take a sizable chunk of the costs. These costs go to pay for items that have nothing to do with providing American chickens with health care. Instead, the funds pay for things like expensive advertising, above average salaries, and of course, let's not forget the campaign contributions the insurance companies make to politicians to keep their systems of denied health care in power. So what do the insurance companies do with all the leftover eggs that Chicken Little and his family worked so hard to produce?
Heck, I'm glad you asked.
Because of the insurance companies' ferocious appetites, they charge every chicken a different amount of eggs for health care coverage. And quite often, it's the poorest chickens who end up paying the most for the least amount of services. This means that sicker and often poorer chickens either must go without health care or somehow pay the inflated price, even if it doesn't cover all their needs. To make matters worse, those chickens who go without health care get sicker and eventually end up costing more to treat in medical emergencies. Who pays for this emergency treatment when the chicken who received it can't afford to?
We do!
So what? I pay my premium and I get all the health care I need. If anything happens to me, I'm set. Why would I worry about someone else's coverage?
Because accidents happen. And when these accidents or illnesses strike, many chickens discover they don't have the health care coverage they thought they paid for.
I don't care whether it's an injury, illness, disease, or anything. If it's going to cost me more to cover you, it sure as heck is going to cost you more to be covered by me. If I cover you at all, that is. That's just how it works when you do business with our insurance.
The insurance companies also make decisions regarding the level of care and treatment chickens can receive. These decisions are often made without consulting or considering the medical opinions and suggestions of doctors.
Aw, now who needs them?
And, as if that wasn't enough, with a for-profit healthcare system, American chickens must also pay escalating and unregulated prices for pharmaceutical drugs not covered by their insurance plans. Adding to this burden is the fact that in many cases, American chickens don't have the option of specialized medical technology when they need it. Because why? Well, you guessed it. Because they can't afford it on their own. And because their insurance doesn't cover it. So we all know now that for-profit health insurance is not only unfair, but ineffective. And you might be asking yourself, what can we do to fix this dilemma? Well, here's the answer. That's right, friends. Roosters and Hens, a single-payer universal healthcare system is just what the American chicken needs. Don't forget that currently insurance companies keep for profit and expenses anywhere from 3 to 4 out of every 10 eggs they collect for healthcare. By cutting them out of the equation, all of the eggs go into a yearly fund, and every chicken contributes to that fund based on a percentage of what they earned.
Hold on a second. How much will I be paying? Will it be more or less than I'm paying now?
Good question. Under a single-payer system, everyone would pay a small amount, like a payroll tax. This amount would be adjusted based on what each chicken earns and can afford to pay. The idea is that the amount would be less than what chickens are paying now, and it would cover a complete range of services.
So you mean we're going to pay less and get more?
Right. And most importantly, the eggs will be distributed by the government and not by greedy corporations who take 1/3 of the eggs they gather as private profits and administration. This way, all of those eggs, as much as $300 billion or more, will go directly to the healthcare costs they were collected for instead of profits and expenses for the you-know-whos. Overall costs are less. It saves doctors, hospitals, and businesses money. And the funds are distributed to where they're needed so they can provide complete coverage for all American chickens.
It's common sense.
Now, that will never work. Now, you need us, and you need us or else you'll have to wait forever to see a doctor. You won't be able to choose who your doctor is, and there won't be any more competition between providers, and the quality of care will go down, that's for sure. Chickens will die. They'll die, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, they're gonna die.
Can't choose doctors. Wait for appointments. Quality goes down.
You see, that's the kind of bird talk big insurance companies want you to hear. But it isn't true. With single-payer coverage, you will finally be able to choose the doctors you want to see. And without the greedy companies taking their profits and skimping on coverage, you'll have more access to services, not less.
That's communism. That's socialism.
On the contrary, the government doesn't take ownership of hospitals, clinics, or healthcare providers at all. Doctors and healthcare enterprises will still operate privately as they always have. The only thing the government takes ownership of is the cost, which is something that benefits every business, person, and family in America.
Without insurance, we're all gonna die!
They've been saying that for years.
And we have to wait forever to see our doctors as it is.
Yeah, and pay fortunes to get prescriptions filled and get treatments denied.
Even a bird brain can figure it out.
Maybe we're starting to catch on.
Yeah, we don't need insurance companies anymore. We need a single-payer universal healthcare system for everybody.
Hey, let's get them. Give them the boot.
I won't be needing this anymore. Now that I've decided to stop being a chicken and give the for-profit healthcare systems the boot.
Yeah, nobody wants to be a chicken.
I don't want to be a chicken anymore either. I want universal single-pay coverage to provide healthcare for me and everybody living in America.
Yeah, now that I know more about single-payer universal coverage,
I'm not a chicken anymore either.
Because there's a solution.
I'm going to talk to my congressperson about supporting a true universal healthcare.
I'm going to organize a screening of Don't Be a Chicken.
I'm bringing the popcorn.
I'm going to say it's about time Americans come to their senses and adopt universal health care.
Because it makes sense.
Because it's possible.
Because we're tired of being chickens.
Yeah. We were American chickens, but then we got our courage. We gave up our power.
So what are you going to do now? Simple. Adopt single-payer universal health care for everybody living in America.
Been listening to the soundtrack from the marvelous animated cartoon DVD, Don't Be a Chicken, about the National Healthcare Solution, HR 676. Don't Be a Chicken is produced by Healthcare Now, and the DVD is available for purchase on their website, www.healthcare-now.org. That's www.healthcare-now.org. And one of the many unions supporting H.R. 676 is the United Mine Workers of America, which is engaged in a new organizing drive, which we'll explore next as Building Bridges continues.
Miners deserve a voice on the job for mine safety, solid health care, and secure pensions. And joining us to discuss the miners at Peabody Energy Corporation and their fight for a voice at work are Jason Hout, assistant to the organizing director of the United Mine Workers, and Ross Hyman, research analyst with the AFL-CIO. It's very good to have you both with us, particularly as I think back that this year brought the deaths of 37 coal miners on the job in the U.S., and 34 of whom perished in, what do you know, non-union mines.
That's right, yeah. That's very good to be here.
Yes, thank you for having us.
And, yeah, that figure definitely shows that, well, if for nothing else, and a lot more, workers need to have a union so they can ensure that their mines are safe.
Absolutely.
Ross, who is Peabody and where are their mines and how many people do they employ in this country and abroad?
Well, they have about 8,300 employees. They have mines in the United States and in Australia, and they actually own a 25% interest in a mine in Venezuela as well. There are mines in the United States. They have mines in West Virginia, most of which are union. They have mines in the Illinois Basin, which includes Illinois and Indiana, Kentucky, most of which in the past were heavily union, in fact, a very militant part of the mine workers. But Peabody has had a sort of strategic plan to deunionize that area, and now most of those mines are non-union. And there also are mines, some union mines on the Navajo Nation, and non-union mines in Wyoming.
Now, are we talking about a marginal coal company? How important, how powerful is Peabody?
Well, this is the largest coal company in the world. Yeah, not just the United States. It's basically the largest private sector coal company in the world. So they have revenue in 2005 of $4.6 billion. They have mined 240 million tons of coal in 2005, and they actually have in the ground, they own the rights to about 9.7 billion tons of coal. They supply about 10% of the electricity in the United States from their coal.
Jason, did Peabody used to be union, and it was deunionized with his union busted. How did that happen, and what are you doing now to reverse that trend?
Well, basically, that is a fact. About 10 years ago, I believe, the United Mine Workers represented 70% of Peabody's operations, and 30% were non-union. It's actually reversed now, and we represent approximately 30%, and it's 70% non-union. What we're doing to change that is, you know, we have obviously started a large organizing campaign. What we're doing is we're targeting every non-union Peabody mine in the United States, basically. And we have partnered with the AFL-CIO. They have given us tremendous support. And ultimately, our goal is, in this campaign, is to convince Peabody that it would be in their best company interest to reach a card check neutrality agreement with the United Mine Workers. What that basically means is that the company and the union would remain neutral and basically let the employees decide whether or not they want a union and let them choose freely. You know, as it is right now, you know, we go through the National Labor Relations Board through an election process. And, you know, by the time we get the majority on cards, we go to an election, it's just a broken system. It doesn't work. By the time we file a petition for an election, by the time we get to the election, the company has time to threaten, harass, or intimidate the employees. For example, you know, they'll hold captive audience meetings at the mines where they'll show anti-union films. You know, they'll threaten to close the mines, and they'll actually fire workers. You know, that is illegal, but, you know, through that process, you know, it may take up to 10 years to get a person's job back, or back pay, or what have you, after we file charges. But, you know, by that time, the organizing drive's gone, and the miner's gotten another job somewhere. So, you know, we're trying to go through this neutrality process, and that's what a lot of the bigger unions are doing, and that's our ultimate goal on that.
You know, we just came out of 12 miners perished at the Sago mine and 5 perished at the Darby mine. And you got a CEO, Greg Boyce, who is telling their shareholders that they're going to continue the process and are making real headway in non-unionization. How in heck's name are they getting away with this given the record of mine safety in non-union mines?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I don't have a real good answer for that. I mean, you know, obviously in a union mine, the union members, you know, they elect their own safety committees. And, you know, in an unsafe work condition, they have the right to refuse work without fear of reprimand. In a non-union mine, I think that, you know, they don't have that, obviously, but I think that they're just scared that they're going to lose their job, so they don't report accidents and they don't report anything like that. So it's basically, you know, it's threats and intimidations through the company, and I think that's the reason behind that.
We're continuing to see that during this current organizing drive. For instance, all employees received a letter. I'm not sure if it's all, but we received a letter from many employees from the senior vice president of the company telling them, this is a quote, "We will do everything in our power, our legal power, to remain union-free."
They probably mean everything in their power, not even their legal power.
Exactly.
Well, you know, and the investors, though, aren't they incensed? I mean, I can't think of another industry that is as grueling, as painful, that evokes such memories and such realities of danger. And can't the investors, aren't they incensed?
Well, we're hoping they will be. We are going to be at the Waldorf Astoria on Thursday. There, Greg Boyce, CEO of Peabody, who gave those anti-union remarks, will be speaking to investors, encouraging them to invest in his company. And so we'll be leafleting outside the Waldorf. That's at 301 Park Avenue, sending the message that you shouldn't invest in any company that doesn't respect fundamental human rights of its workers to organize.
And yes, this is also something. I mean, it's not just there. We're basically following Peabody wherever they're going to be. We're going to be to get our point across, and you know, let them know that it the workers need to have the right to choose, and you know, the most pressure we can put on them, the better off we are, and we are going to follow them, and we're going to be wherever they're at. So, you know, that's just a message that we're trying to get across to their investors and their shareholders and anybody that will listen, basically.
Jason, we've talked about safety, and that's certainly a paramount concern in terms of organizing the mines. But what are some of the other issues that you're dealing with in this organizing drive?
You've got job bidding, favoritism. For example, you know, you've got a position upheld, and you've got a boss's son, perhaps, that wants to come in, and they hire him in front of somebody with more seniority. You know, if you get injured, you've got a possibility of being fired. I mean, you're an employee at will, basically. And, you know, the company can basically do whatever and whenever they want to you without any reprimand. So, you know, that's some of the main issues.
I've heard several stories from workers who've been injured on the job who then are off the job and getting workers' compensation. While they're off, Peabody cuts off their family's health insurance. And then when the doctor says it's time for them to go back to work, that they're okay, they can go back to work, Peabody lays them off. So they're being treated like pieces of equipment that break down, and they just toss away.
Exactly what it is. Along with that, you've got retirement. Once retired, you know, a non-union employee will have no pension and no health insurance. So it's just a, you know, it's a major injustice toward these workers, and we're here to try to fight for their rights and let them have a voice at work.
I don't know how far your show goes across the United States, but people have an opportunity to hear mine workers at these Peabody non-union mines themselves speak at a Kentucky Jobless Justice Workers' Rights Board hearing on Sunday, September 17th at Zion United Church of Christ in Henderson, Kentucky, and they can look at the Kentucky Jobless Justice website for more information about that.
I keep thinking of the song The Coal Tattoo, or so many others, or silicosis and black lung disease, and again the outrage of an industry like this. And oh, just throw a number. What is Peabody Coal making profits? The largest coal company in the world.
Well, their net income in 2005 was about $0.4 billion,
and that keeps escalating.
And yeah. do we know what Greg Boyce's salary is?
Yeah, happened to mention it. Yeah, it was $3.8 million in 2005. The chairman of the board, his salary in 2005, he was also CEO at that time, was $4.9 million.
And he worked his way up from the bottom, did he? He's got that coal dust under those nails.
I don't think that was the case, but.
Good gracious.
Well, you want to make the guy
arrogance.
Poor, you know, the poor capitalist, for God's sake, you're complaining about this.
Well, I mean, the arrogance of power and wealth. I just really think that it is imperative that people come out and support our brother workers who are fighting Peabody Energy Corporation in order to unionize. And we're all going to send a powerful message to
right.
Boyce and investors that the entire labor movement stands with coal miners. Does it really make that much difference? Does it really make that much difference to have a unionized mine in terms of a voice of the workers, in terms of safety?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, like you said, there was 37 deaths this year. 34 of them were non-union. I mean, you know, that speaks for itself.
You can also look in the long view. I mean, right now, the company is 30% union, and so there is some pressure on the company to keep certain safety standards and so forth up to some minimal level, because otherwise they know that there will be that much more encouragement of workers to organize. But if you go, say, west, where the union culture is much less, then you can see that there's what happens when there's not as much union pressure, and you get places like the co-op mine in Utah.
I didn't even know there was a co-op mine. Wow.
Well, it's called that was just the name of it, the co-op mine, and that was a mine where the safety record was horrible.
Mm.
There were hired lots of undocumented workers and really exploited their status.
Mm.
This is quite recent.
And in order to keep up with the Justice at Peabody campaign, what do we do?
Go to the www.justiceatpeabody.org website. You will find information about the campaign, what we're doing in the coalfield communities. These are communities that are quite far away from any metropolitan area, so you don't typically hear about them on the news. But actually, a tremendous amount is happening there as far as city councils supporting the miners. About a dozen small city councils, town councils, endorsing the Carjack neutrality for miners or the right of workers to organize without management interference. We have 700 church leaders sign on to a similar statement. About 550 of those are pastors and 150 are lay leaders. In these communities, people have, it really is incredible to see the support for the mine workers. It's campaign season, so you'd expect to see yard signs up with political candidates, but people have yard signs up that say, we support the UMWA. And you go through these towns, and there's just sign after sign after sign showing the support of the community.
That along with Justice at Peabody signs.
Right.
Well, we certainly support the justice for those workers in the Peabody mines who want a union, who want a voice, who want mine safety and solid health care and secure pensions. Absolutely. And the justice at Peabody.org is right next to the Killer Coke, is right next to the Walmart. So we've got a whole little cluster. And if we can unionize these places, if we can deal with the Coca-Cola around the world, if we can unionize Walmart, the largest employer in the world of its kind, and Peabody, I do believe we're going to put the labor back in Labor Day.
Right. Well, remember, there was a time, you know, when the mine workers, that union, really changed this whole society. Part of it was because coal was essentially the fuel that fueled the whole United States. And when the mine workers went on strike, you know, really affected the whole country. And just about everything you could say is what America means today is because of what the mine workers have done. And when you look at employer health care and pensions, that all came out of the mine workers. Ending child labor, all of that was from mine worker struggles. And again, with they see that you know, oil reserves are falling and more coal is coming back as a major fuel source with coal conversion into diesel fuel and so forth, that again, I think a highly unionized industry can bring us, you know, much further along in terms of, towards a progressive America with universal health care.
Well, I haven't been to the Waldorf for a long time, so I'm looking forward to going there.
I've never been inside. We're picketing it, but I've never been inside.
Well, we'll see you at the Waldorf Astoria. Thank you both very much. Jason Hout, assistant to the organizing director of the United Mine Workers, and Ross Hyman, research analyst, the AFL-CIO. And I'm Amy Rosenberg with Ken Nash, and you've been listening to a Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report special, Workers of the World Under Attack. What must they do? Fight back, and go to the Waldorf Astoria.